Question: What do you call a Yugo that breaks down after 100 miles? An overachiever. In the 1950s, a small arms factory in Yugoslavia started making cars. At its peak, the sprawling company employed 1 million people and produced nearly 190,000 cars a year. They made several well-known cars, including one iconic little thing that Americans love to hate. In this video, we look at the life and death of communist Yugoslavia's flagship car company, Zastava Automobiles. But first, this video is brought to you by the Asianometry Patreon. Early access members get to see new videos first and selected references for those videos. Early access really helps a lot, and I appreciate every pledge. Thank you, and on with the show. I mentioned Yugoslavia a few times before, but we should do an introduction. The Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia was called Europe's most complex nation. It had six socialist republics: Bosnia and Herzegovina, Croatia, Macedonia, Montenegro, Serbia, and Slovenia. The capital city of Belgrade was located within Serbia. Five large nationalities live within there: Serbs, Slovens, Croats, Montenegrins, and Macedonians. They spoke one of three languages: Macedonian, Slovenian, and Serbo-Croatian. The latter was the country's common language and itself has four variants. Yugoslavs practice one of three religions: Catholicism in Slovenia and Croatia, Eastern Orthodox Christianity in Serbia, Montenegro, and Macedonia, and Islam practiced by the Bosnians and ethnic Albanians. Altogether, Yugoslavia is the same size as West Germany, but it is far less densely populated, with about 23 million people by 1991. Naturally, the geography is also incredibly diverse. Less than 40% of the land is arable. Half of it is hilly or mountainous, and the climate ranges from alpine to Mediterranean to desert to high rains. The country has long been plagued by discontent between its various peoples, particularly those in its northern and southern regions. The north used to be part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, while the south used to be part of the Ottoman Empire. During World War II, the Germans invaded Yugoslavia, and the Axis powers split the country apart. To divide any potential opposition, the Axis took a page out of the colonialist playbook and exploited peoples' ancient differences. Opposition rose nevertheless. The Yugoslav Communist Party, a clandestine party driven underground by the previous royal government in 1920. After the German invasion, the communists re-emerged out of hiding as the partisans. Led by Josip Broz Tito, the communists organized perhaps the war's most effective anti-Axis partisan force. To gain the popular support of a divided population, the communists discarded Marxist-Leninist ideology and promised regional governmental autonomy to the nationalities. Armed with material support from the Allies, the partisans fought admirably. After the war ended, Tito and his party cemented power in a yes-no election in 1945. Their coalition won 90% of the vote, and thus Yugoslavia became a communist state. World War II inflicted immense damage on the Yugoslavs. In total, 1.7 million, or about 11% of the pre-war population, died. Nearly a quarter of the country was homeless. Two-fifths of the country's industrial production was destroyed. The goals of the Communist Party of Yugoslavia did not much differ from that of the rest of Eastern Europe. They wanted to establish an egalitarian worker state and end their country's perceived rural exploitation by the capital classes of Europe. So, rapid industrialization. At first, the nation's economic policies moved towards central planning like that in the Soviet Union, but in the middle of 1948, there was the infamous break between Stalin and Tito. The Soviets severed their military and economic aid to the Yugoslavs, and after attempts to repair the relationship failed, the Yugoslavs pivoted. They distanced themselves from Stalin's ideas, saying that there were many roads to socialism. Theirs would be defined by workers' self-management and social ownership. Stalinist-style collectivization and set output targets were abandoned. Enterprises gained the capability to run their own affairs through worker councils that managed assets allocated to them. In theory, this would make companies like cooperatives, though notably they had no ownership in the company or its assets. In practice, governments still exercised considerable control over industry and individual businesses. These new economic policies began to roll out in 1952, The American government recognized an opportunity and extended loans and donations to support the economy. They urged the Yugoslav government to pivot from producing heavy industry Leninist goods like steel, electric plants, and oil refineries, and instead produce, quote, mass consumer goods, end quote, like cars. Zastava, the name literally means flag, is one of the country's oldest industrial companies. The company was founded in the 1850s as a cannon factory in the city of Kragujevac, about 100 kilometers away from Belgrade. They then expanded into repeating rifles, produced in conjunction with the Germans and first used in the Serbo-Bulgarian War. Zastava has had a long-running interest in automobiles. In the 1930s, they assembled military truck kits from foreign car makers, the first kits from the Czech car company Praga, and then Chevrolet. The 1941 German invasion ended all that. The Germans extensively bombed Belgrade, causing serious damage to the Zastava auto factory. It took some years after the war to get back on track. At some point during that time, the company amended its name from Zastava to Krivenia Zastava, meaning red flag, presumably showing solidarity with communism. In 1948, Zastava attempted to restart its military equipment business, producing rifles and grenades, but then the government abruptly relocated those programs to the mountains of Bosnia. This was done to shield the military supply chain from a possible Soviet attack, and fair enough. Though it never happened, such an invasion was a real threat in 1949. But it also left the Zastava factory with nothing to produce, so the factory's workers voted overwhelmingly so, like 96% of the vote, to produce civilian cars. The factory's ambitions were supported by a powerful member of the Yugoslav Communist Party, an engineer and former commissar during the war named Mijalko Todorovic Plavi. Todorovic was a close associate of Tito himself. In 1953, he joined the Federal Executive Council, which essentially ran the federal government. He took a keen interest in developing the automobile industry and personally encouraged a Zastava plant to pursue automobile production. The plant raced with urgency to acquire technology and begin production, in part to avoid job losses and in part to grab share before other factories, there was a truck factory in Slovenia, could. In 1953, they struck a deal with the American car maker Willys Overland to assemble Jeeps, but that deal fell apart after only 163 Jeeps when Willys demanded a share of every Jeep sold without offering additional help. In August 1953, Zastava and the federal government issued a public tender for a partnership. The winner had to transfer full production rights for a passenger car made in their country. Several companies responded, sending samples of their cars to the factory. In November 1953, Zastava chose the Italian car giant Fiat. Fiat was then facing American challengers in its domestic market and was struggling to upgrade their cars to compete. In response, they sought to grab early footholds in countries considered to be quote-unquote under-motorized, countries that were somewhat developed but have not yet gone down the path of mass motorization. In 1954, there were only 11,290 cars in Yugoslavia, about one car for every 1,500 people. For the first deal, Fiat offered the Fiat 1,400 and 1,900 cars plus a few trucks for transfer as well as some technical help. Zastava only had to pay a very low price of $560,000, or about $6 million today, in the form of parts purchases. The 10-year contract was signed in 1954. Also that year, Yugoslavia and Italy peacefully settled a long-running border dispute. The new commercial pact was held up as a sign of new cooperation between Yugoslavia and the West. At the time of the deal signing, the Zastava factory's director was Voja Radić. Radić was a great partisan tank commander and war hero during World War II, but he either lacked the administrative competence to carry out the deal or some other issues were going on, because he was then replaced by an engineer named Proslav Rakovic. As a manager, Rakovic displayed exceptional vision and drive. He wanted to turn Zastava into a world-class automotive hub for all of Comic-Con. He led a team of engineers across Europe, studying automobile factories and compiling learnings into a book. In a series of deals in the late 1950s, he convinced Fiat to transfer over one of its most popular cars, the Fiat 600, and invest millions of dollars to construct a brand new factory to build this little car at scale. It was built against the wishes of several factions inside the Yugoslav communist government, which saw it as frivolous and wasteful. The factory was not allocated funding, so the cunning Rakovic got Fiat to fund it. The new Zastava plant opened in 1962. Their first big product was the Zastava 750 line, or the Ficha, based on that aforementioned Fiat 600. The nickname comes from a newspaper comic published at the time. They produced a million Zastava 750s from 1955 to 1985. The factory produced about 32,000 of these four-seater cars each year, but had capacity for 82,000. The company also produced a heavy-duty off-road truck called the Zastava AR-51, based on the Fiat Campagnola. A sturdy little truck, it was produced for over 20 years. Supported by rising real incomes, government-issued loans, and high auto tariffs, these Zastava cars sold well. However, Zastava frequently faced issues with vehicle quality. Famously, Czechoslovak visitors at a 1961 exhibition in Brno ridiculed Yugoslav cars as being worse than even other Eastern European cars. Ouch. To this, Zastava often blamed its supply chain. The company made few of its own parts. In line with the politics of brotherhood and unity, Zastava sided its supply chain across the country regardless of how far they were from the core factory in Kragujevac. Supplies were being sourced as far away as the city of Kranj in Slovenia, 700 kilometers away. Logistical problems, erratic deliveries, and low-quality parts plagued car production and squeezed Zastava's margins. But it was a pretty toxic relationship on both sides. Zastava management often squeezed its suppliers, paying late and always demanding lower prices, leading to resentment and even worse quality parts. In the end, Zastava can only blame itself. In 1966, 70% of quote-unquote lost output, accounting for a staggering 60% of total output, was attributed to factory-specific issues, frequent breakdowns in equipment, and a lack of workforce discipline, like work desertion, shifts that start late and end early, or frequent smoke breaks. This lack of workforce discipline was serious, and today known as one of the major downsides of the worker council-based self-management economic system. As I mentioned, Yugoslavia's economy grew very fast during the 1950s and 1960s. However, much of this growth and industrialization during those years was done with imported technologies. High amounts of import caused Yugoslavia to run a growing trade deficit. This, along with high levels of foreign borrowing, drained the country of foreign exchange reserves. By 1969, Yugoslavia was over $2 billion in foreign debt. In response, the government began pushing practices to acquire more hard currency. Yugoslavs were allowed to leave the country to work. By 1969, Yugoslavs had 10.6 million border crossings and were sending back millions of dollars. The trade deficit, however, was over $1 billion a year by the early 1970s. In response, Yugoslav companies were instructed to export more. So Zastava collaborated with Fiat to produce the Zastava 101. Or 7101 car in 1971. The Z101 sold well domestically, but consumers did not much enjoy it. It was originally called the Stojadan, which in Serbo-Croatian means 101. But drivers quickly dubbed it the Stojadin, which is a play on words meaning 100 troubles. Nevertheless, the Z101 was solid enough to be sold abroad in places like India and Egypt. Zastava struck a component-sharing deal with various Comic-Con countries like Poland, both cutting costs and producing sales there. The car was produced until 2008. Soon after the Z101's launch, the oil crises of the 1970s greatly damaged the company's finances, alarming the government. Rancor between Zastava management and government officials over the company's direction and goals eventually led to Rakovic's sacking in 1974. He was replaced by a politician named Milenko Bozanich. He restructured the company in an attempt to push the company towards larger social goals. Unfortunately, this also caused further declines in worker productivity. The company had to hire ever more people to grow car output. In 1979, Zastava produced the most cars it ever would, 186,000 vehicles, but needed 50,000 employees to do so. That is about 3.7 vehicles per worker, a number that would only decline over the next 10 years or so. To compare, General Motors that year had about 460,000 employees and sold 15.5 million cars, or about 34 vehicles per worker. And Toyota had 49,486 employees, producing 3.1 million cars, or about 63 cars per employee. After the Z101, Zastava's next big project was the infamous Yugo. This little two-door hatchback began as a replacement for the old Ficha, which was finally retired in 1985. Designed in 1978, the car was based on a 1971 Fiat design, the 127 and then the 128, but Zastava had a strong hand in the design specifications. The name Yugo had nothing to do with the name Yugoslavia, which literally meant land of the southern Slavs. The car's original name was the Zastava 102, which makes sense since it came after the Z101. But they couldn't use that name in Western Europe because Peugeot trademarked the use of three-digit numbers with a zero in the middle for cars' as names. So they changed it to Yugo, with a J, a reference to a southern moist wind that blows over the Adriatic. But the name has weird connotations in English and in Spanish means juice, so they swapped out the J with a Y, ergo Yugo. They added a 45 because it had a 45 horsepower engine. In 1980, Tito died of heart failure, and he left behind an economy that struggled to stay afloat between the oil crises and a global recession. Again, Zastava was asked to help the country export its way out. The Yugo 45 first entered production in 1980 and found its way to various Western European countries like Belgium and Holland. In 1983, they started selling it in the United Kingdom at a price of $4,600, or $14,500, today. There, it caught the eye of an auto importer businessman named Malcolm Bricklin. After making a fortune in the retail hardware business, he pivoted to car imports, founding Subaru of America in 1968. Bricklin decided to make the Yugo his next big project. In 1984, Bricklin's team went to Belgrade for negotiations with Zastava. His employees were shocked by the car's quality, calling it primitive and shoddy. A factory tour discovered thick layers of grease on the walls, damaged parts going into a finished car, and nobody observing common sense safety regulations. Yet Bricklin thought all these were fixable. The biggest thing to him was worker wages. A South Korean auto worker gets $3 an hour, Japanese worker $8 an hour, American $20 an hour. A Yugoslav auto worker at Zastava gets paid just 70 cents an hour. American congressmen later accused the company of using slave labor. Bricklin's team made a list of 600 product adaptations for the U.S. market, ranging from body paint to windshields to screws. Then in early 1985, Bricklin started marketing and selling the Yugo in the U.S. market. With a base price of $4,000, the Yugo was America's smallest and cheapest car on the market. By comparison, the imported Chevrolet Sprint was $5,151 and the Ford Escort $5,620. As Bricklin predicted, the price immediately caught people's interest. The first shipment of 4,000 cars arrived in August 1985, and over the next 3 years, sales grew from 5,000 to 50,000. Perhaps because it was so cheap and low quality, Yugo was often ridiculed. My favorite jokes are as followed. Question: what comes with every Yugo owner's manual? A bus schedule. How do you double the value of a Yugo? Fill the tank with gas. How do you make a Yugo go faster? Use a tow truck. How can you get a Yugo to do 60 miles an hour? You push it over a cliff. What do a Yugo and a ceiling fan have in common? They both have the same motor. What's the difference between a Yugo and a golf ball? You can drive a golf ball 200 yards. The Yugo was pretty terrible, but it actually did better than other cars of its class. That over 300 dealerships across the nation adopted it for sale is an indication of that. But sales started to falter in 1988, and the business Bricklin set up to sell the car filed for bankruptcy in January 1989. It was finally taken off the market in 1992, due to NATO sanctions, with 141,651 sold. If you want to learn more about the Yugo's epic time in America, I highly recommend Jason Vuick's book, The Yugo. The core issue was that Zastava was not making back the substantial investments it made into product development and production. Altogether, the Yugo and its follow-up Yugo Florida programs cost the company over $400 million. Combined with depreciation, researcher Michael Palaret estimates that Zastava lost $1 billion in total on these two programs. This was not unusual. Most of Yugoslavia's export fetched a lower price abroad than what they can be sold for domestically, indicating that the company converted expensive imports to cheap exports, the reverse of what it should be. And then there was Yugoslavia itself. The post-Tito government struggled to keep the country together. In 1992, Yugoslavia began to dissolve into separate republics. The early 1990s were a terrible time economically. Zastava was so economically desperate to reduce headcount that they offered employees a free van for leaving. And the breakup devastated Zastava's distributed supply chain. The factory could not get car parts, and moreover, the company lost its top geographic market, Croatia, which separated from Serbia after a bloody war. In general, the conflicts, wars, and sanctions that followed the dissolution of Yugoslavia was bad for business, capped off by a 1999 NATO bombing that damaged a Zastava factory. NATO apparently believed the factory was producing arms, though the actual Zastava arms factory suffered little damage. Repairs cost millions of dollars and put dozens of the company's suppliers at risk of bankruptcy. Zastava and the Serbian government plunged effort and finances into repairing the damage, which kept them from developing new products. The government still owns Zastava until 2008. That year, they sold a 70% majority stake in the company as well as its factory to Fiat, the intention being to attract foreign investment and to follow Slovakia's path. Korean carmaker Kia built a factory there in 2004 and has since turned the little country into an automotive manufacturing hub. At the time, the company was reportedly still selling 1,000 cars a month, the most popular being, of course, the Yugo car. The sale meant that the Zastava name would vanish from its home market, and the last Zastava left the factory in November 2008. Its market niche was taken over by Fiat Puntos. In the end, the gambit did not succeed, though, and in 2017, the larger Zastava automotive group filed for bankruptcy. The Yugoslav government's direction to export to generate foreign exchange is reminiscent of the export-led growth strategy in East Asia. Why did it not work? Zastava was plagued by low worker productivity, and the government's insistence that the company fulfill wider quote-unquote social goals kept the company from improving its productivity. And Zastava could not leverage what it acquired from Fiat and innovate on its own, forcing them to import ever more expensive technologies. The Zastava name is still around and retains nostalgia value as a simple car for the masses. It was the most complicated product that the Serbs have ever made. For decades, they made the cars that put Yugoslavia on the road, and I say that is deserving of pride. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.